Welcome to Orach Chaim Parshas Miketz. Last week I had promised you a particular Orach Chaim that's important from a Hashkafic perspective, a very interesting Hashkafa in terms of God's providence, the notion of Hashkafa Propis, which the Orach Chaim puts forward. We didn't get to it last week, but interestingly enough, the Orach Chaim references this point of his a few times in Parshas Miketz, so in a certain sense we can get through the back door that which we didn't get a chance to do last week in Parshas Vayeshev. Right, so I want to analyze really just a few psukim with you through the lens of the Orach Chaim. In Perek Mem Beis, the brothers have come down to Mitzrayim to buy food to bring back to Eretz Yisrael. They are presented in front of Yosef, who as far as they know is just this Egyptian ruler. Yosef sees them, he recognizes them, and he accuses them of being spies, right? They say, no, we're not spies, but, they protest, but he says, no, you have to send one of you back to Eretz Yisrael, bring down your younger brother, who you keep talking about, who doesn't seem to be here. And it says, after he tells them that to send somebody back and bring down Binyamin, Perek Mem Beis, Pasuk Yitzayit, Vayesof Osam El Mishma Shvoshes Yamin. He gathered them in to prison for 3 days. Yosef says to them on the third day, look, I'll give you a choice. I'm a God-fearing man. I'll give you something you can do to extricate yourselves from this predicament. If you're really telling the truth, so then let only one of you will stay here in prison, and the rest of you, the rest of you will go home. One of you will stay here in prison in Mitzrayim, the rest of you will go home. And bring back your younger brother, and, you know, his bringing him here will show the proof of your words. And this will validate that everything that you've been telling me. Each man said to his brother, they said to one another, Avol, Hashemim anachnu alochinu. However, we are guilty because of our brother. We saw the distress he was in when he was pleading with us, and we didn't listen. In other words, the reference to Yosef. Yosef was in the pit. He was pleading with us for his life. We didn't listen. That's why, you know, this entire terrible story is befalling us. One more pasuk. Reuven said to the rest of the brothers as follows. Behold, I told you, it's all your fault. I told you that you shouldn't do anything to harm the boy, and you didn't listen to me. You see, his blood is being avenged by the Ribbono Shel Olam. This exchange, first between the brothers and one another, and then Reuven with the rest of the brothers, is the source of some extensive commentary by the Orach Chaim. So if you look on page Resh Tes in the Orach Chaim, it's Perek Mem Beis, Pasuk Chof Aleph, the Orach Chaim comments as follows, right? The brothers said to one another, Avol Hashemim Anachu Alachinu, literally, however, but, we are guilty because of what we did to our brother. So Zot the Orach Chaim, Tevas Avol, Ein Lo Mashmos Kan. The word Avol seems to be totally misplaced over here. What do you mean, but? However. What's the however? You know, however is always, you know, in contrast to something. Here's the first word that they say, however. Right? What's however? I'm a Targum Omar B'Kushta. Now, if you look at the Targum, right, the Targum translates the word Avol as verily, right, indeed, in truth. The Gamaleo Don Anochi, right, and says the Archaim, okay, but that doesn't really answer the question either. Lama Husruchu Lama B'Kushta. Why introduce what they're about to say with the word indeed, verily? Right? Why not just say, Hashemim anachnu alochinu, we are guilty because of what we did to our brother. Right? What role does the word avol play over here whatsoever? Oh, furthermore, lomo harichu loshim lomo ashero inu v'gomer v'lo amru stam. L'chora, the brothers should have said to one another, we're guilty because we sold our brother. Right? In other words, that's why all of this terrible stuff is befalling us. They don't say that. That would have been the simpler way of expressing their you know, their feelings. They say, we're guilty because we saw what our brother was pleading with us and we didn't respond to his cries. Right? I mean, it's very poetic, it's very dramatic, but the truth is, that's not really the real point. The point is, we feel guilty because we took our brother, you know, tore up his clothing, threw him into a pit, and then sold him down to Mitzrayim as a slave. That's why we feel bad, not because he was pleading with us. That's a small portion of the infamy which they committed. They should have said, we're being punished because we sold him. That was the point. Right, so explains the Arachayim. Perhaps what's going on here is the following, and this is a point much later. Yaakov Kamenetsky draws our attention to the same point as well. The brothers, the Davka, avoid saying that we're being punished because we sold him. Why? Because let's think back to Parshas Vayeshev, an idea which the Arachayim brought out then. The brothers felt that they were absolutely justified in killing Yosef. Right, that's the point that Arachayim made last week. The brothers saw Yosef as someone who was trying to kill them. He was essentially a rodef. He was telling their father that they had committed all kinds of crimes, which under Ben Noach law were punishable by the death capital punishment, by the death decree. So, you know, if that's the case, Yosef was deserving of death. And in a certain sense, the fact that they sold him was a chesed. They commuted his sentence, right? In other words, he really should have gotten a much worse penalty. You know, they were showing rachmanus in the fact that they sold him, right? So that's the first thing. In other words, the sale per se didn't bother the brothers because the brothers really felt justified in killing Yosef. And the fact that they sold him, in a sense, was doing him a tova. V'im al shigam utsaras aviyem. And if you tell me, but they caused a lot of pain and distress to their father, adarabah. Dover zeh Yosef lo machof. V'lo yasa Hashem yisuri ovon tsar aviyem, v'dover sheigdal od tsar hatsaro. You'll tell me, say the brothers, that okay, we were justified in even killing him. And certainly we were justified in selling him, which is, you know, not as bad. But it causes pain to our father. Yeah, but this event, that Shimon is being kept in Mitzrayim, and that Binyamin is being demanded to come down to Mitzrayim, will cause Yaakov even further tsa'ar. And it's impossible that we would be punished for causing tsa'ar to our father by getting a punishment which will cause even more tsa'ar to our father. So the Arachayim is basically saying that as a given, as a yesod. In other words, I think the idea is as follows: the purpose of punishment is to correct. Right, punishment is corrective, it's not just punitive in nature. So, right, but in other words, it's not kind of, you know, if you would say that they made the father suffer, so we may well, they'll suffer, that's a kapara. But they made the father suffer, so now something will happen which will cause the father to suffer even more in the same way as we deprived him of his Yosef. So Hashem is going to punish us by depriving Yaakov of his Binyamin. So that doesn't make any logical sense. You know, right, but
it's true that the
it could be, but again, the Arachayim is suggesting that this is just a yesod in how you look at punishments, and he's going to continue on this line a little bit later, namely that the way the punishment is carried out can give you an insight as to whether it's divine punishment or just happenstance. Very interesting, Arachayim is going to develop. In other words, not everything that happens is necessarily a punishment. It's only a punishment if it happens in such and such a fashion, right? So the Arachayim takes as axiomatic, if we're being punished for causing Yaakov pain, we wouldn't get punished in a way which would cause Yaakov more pain. That's a yesod in terms of how God works the system of punishments. Right? And I guess he's saying, again, how he knows this, I don't know, but that's why he's the Arachayim, right? He's saying that even if Yaakov, in theory, deserved pain for some other reason, the punishment for causing him pain could never be, by definition, could never be the vehicle for causing him more pain. Very interesting idea in terms of, you know, schar ve'onesh. Right? The asher al kein lo matzu ava. So when the brothers do a cheshben anefesh, why is all of this happening to us? They can't really pinpoint any sin. We were right to sell Yosef. We really could have killed Yosef. We were right to sell Yosef. And we caused Yaakov pain inadvertently. Okay, but it can't be that we're being punished for that, because this is also causing Yaakov pain. So that's what they say. Ve'amru avol ashemim anachnu al achinu sheroinu pirush sha'al koponim hoyo lehem lirachim alav yiros achim ischanim al sakonat nafsho v'nis achzeru el of v'dobis dem v'gunu at sadikim asoso al kein boi leidu at zora azos. The only thing that they can find, which is, you know, problematic in what they did, is that when he was pleading with us and screaming to us from the pit, we should have showed more mercy than we actually did. Now, even though in point of fact, we needed to show no mercy, right, from a pure halachic point of view, because again, it's chayv nisa, just kill the guy, you know, I mean, you're not expected to show mercy to someone who's a criminal. Right, a guy's being taken out to be executed, and he says, oi, you know, rachmanis, right? It's not rachmanis to spare a criminal the death penalty, right? If he deserves it, he deserves it. But even within punishing someone, you have to try to minimize the suffering. You can't take away the punishment, but you should try to minimize the suffering that person is undergoing. L'mashal, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that, you know, b'ror lo misa yofe, right, that when a person is executed, he's given a drug, you know, to dull his senses prior to the to the execution. Why? Because we have to l'reicha kamocha. After l'reicha kamocha, the guy's on death row. You know, I mean, why are we showing such rachmanis sentence? The answer is, we don't show him rachmanis to get rid of his sentence, but we'll show him rachmanis that at least, you know, you don't have to torture him to death. In other words, let him die, but let him die in a way which, relatively speaking, is, you know, the easier way to go. Brolo misa yafa. So the brothers, in reviewing their actions, can only find fault with themselves in that, you know what, maybe we should have shown him some rachmanis while he was in the pit. You know, he was screaming and we ignored him. They sit down for lunch. Maybe we should, I don't know, but you know, maybe we should have thrown him a sandwich. He's in the pit. You know, he deserves to be in the pit. He deserves to be sold. He really deserves to be killed. But you know what, Koch, we could have thrown out a sandwich while he was there. So on that, you know, we have charata that maybe we're being punished, that maybe, you know, that's the source of all of these terrible things that are happening over here. So this is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, by the way, in his commentary to the Chumash. And it's really, it's just echoing what the Aruch Haim is saying over here. So you see, the brothers, even at this point, feel totally justified in what they did to Yosef. Because the only thing that they can find wrong in their actions is, you know what, maybe we should have shown him a little bit of rachmanis while he was down there in the pit. They don't say the more obvious thing, you know, we're being punished because we sold him. We're being punished because we almost killed him. Right? That, they don't have any problem with. But you know, they look into their actions and there's this little prat, this little detail. You know, we could have shown them a little bit more rachmanis. That's why we're being punished. I just come to Rabbi Reuben in just one second. So says the Rachaim, that's pshat in avol, however. Because again, however implies a kind of contrast. There's this, but there's that. So what's avol? So the way the Rachaim reads the pasuk is as follows. There's a missing first part of the sentence. The brothers say to one another, you know, why is this coming upon us? Why are these events befalling us? And they start thinking through. It can't be because we sold Yosef, because he really deserved it. And it can't be because we caused Yaakov pain, because then this type of punishment would never come about, which will cause Yaakov more pain. So why are we being punished? Ah, we get it. But we should have shown more rachmanis. In other words, the first couple of things are not problematic, but, you know, the caveat in all of that is that we should have shown more rachmanis while he was in the pit. That's avol. Avol, asher anachnu alochinu, asher ro'inu tzoras nafsho v'ischanu eleinu v'lo shomanu. Right? Like the fact that we ignored his pleas for mercy, that was not appropriate for tzaddikim of our stature. Avol, that's the avol. Yeah.
We're being held accountable for his blood.
Right. So we'll get to Ruvay's response in a little bit. That's the Archive going to talk about.
is, why can we say the reverse? The more that it says that all that God vote that is high, all that is unanimous, and then we pray to God. The guy fought it.
Right.
So if all the blood was voted that he should yes, okay, they shouldn't be free. Maybe I said, okay, I'm a shaman, I'm guilty, I'm not killed. We all want that he's guilty. So we should have freed him.
That's right. So Rabbi Reuben asked the Gemara Sanhedrin says that if the entire Beis Din, you know, it's the opposite of American law. In American law, you need, you know, you have a hung jury if not everybody comes through. In Halacha, if the entire Beis Din votes that it's Chayav Nisa, so, you know, we cancel the decree. Right?
Let's see. I'm sorry? They just say they don't have any reason to acquit.
No, if they pack all five of Chayav
Nisa. During the vote.
During the final vote. All 23 feel that it's Chayiv Nisa, so ironically, then he gets off, because it means that you didn't do a good enough job looking for schusim. You have to find some schusim for a person, right? Unbelievable halacha, right? Everyone has a good side. Even a murderer, you know, has to have somebody sticking up for him. So the fact that all the brothers got together and voted, you know, Yosef into the pit, shouldn't that be reason enough to cancel their, you know, they're psacked in? So I think the answer is, based on what we learned last time from the Archaim, they're judging him according to the laws of Bnei Noach. And the Bnei Noach laws, you don't have that concept. Right? Now the Bnei Noach laws, if they find him guilty, he's guilty. You know, the Bnei Noach laws works according to this.
You don't put anybody in
the right, no, so again, so this they felt that they're doing him a taiva. We're not going to kill him, we're only going to sell him. Right? As granted, selling somebody is not ordinarily a way of, you know, dealing with a person's misdeeds, even in Ben Noach law. But you know, they felt this was more compassionate than actually killing him directly. So that's Avol Hashem Manachnu. Yeah.
At this point, the brothers didn't know Yosef's identity.
Right. They still think he's the Tzafnas Banei.
How did they zero in? How did he zero in on this?
22 years later.
Yeah, I mean, right. according to what we've done so far, they didn't have any remorse.
Right.
So why this sort of like side point that maybe 22 years later Yosef was pleading with them too much? I hear the point, but I don't find it particularly convincing, really.
Right, so I think the question, again, for Marty is, if it's been 22 years, and as far as the brothers are concerned, they basically did the right thing by selling Yosef, why all of a sudden would this come to mind as explaining where this whole thing comes from? So one answer to the question the archive himself is going to give in a few minutes. So we'll wait a little bit for that. But beyond that, I do think what Yaakov mentions, that i.e. the tzaddik, you know, the shvatim were tzaddikim, and as they thought over their actions for the last two decades, you know, really the only thing they could think of that would cause this, you know, terrible thing to be happening was the story of Yosef, a story in which they thought that by and large they had acted correctly. So it's a little bit of an insight into the kind of people we're talking about. You know, these were people who, when they reviewed their lives up to this point, found their lives to be relatively blameless. I mean, it's really something quite astonishing.
Yeah, I've also seen that the way you're explaining the archive, they thought that they were all being punished equally at this point. So altogether, what sin did they do
as a group? Right. So let's hold that point, actually, because it's something similar to that we'll see in the archive in just a moment. Bottom of Reish Tes. Oh, here it's Alzeh Derech. Right, or consider the following, says the Arachaim. Bottom of page, Resh Tes, the right-hand corner. Leo Shirol Kulam Yachad Ba'ula Mishmar. Since they saw, as Yaakov said a moment ago, that all the brothers were initially thrown into the prison. Right, again, what happens? Yosef throws all the brothers into prison for 3 days. Chashvu B'daitom B'shel Mi Ara. So they thought to themselves, who's responsible for this? The Leo Shemecher Yosef. Right, to address Marty's point from before, since the sale of Yosef was a sign between their eyes, what does that mean? Meaning, they thought about it, and they reviewed it, and they were fixated on it for 22 years. This was not just, I mean, you sell your brother into slavery, even if you think he's deserving. It's not like, okay, well, we sold him, you know, like, but what's next, you know? This, even if it didn't weigh on their conscience in the sense that they, you know, they thought they had done the right thing, but nonetheless, it was an event that was a watershed event in their lives. Hard to get away from that.
Did you realize from Yaakov, when he was going through those
23
years?
Yeah, so that may support the Or HaChaim, meaning, again, they felt they had done the right thing. But nonetheless, it was clearly a major watershed event for the family. Witness what it did to Yaakov. So the truth is, you know, like most responsible people, they, even though they thought they were right, they never forgot, they never stopped thinking about it. I mean, Rashi, elsewhere in the Sedra, brings that from the time that they sold Yosef, they stopped drinking wine for 22 years. Which, you know, back then, you know, it was a lot more significant than it is, I mean, still significant today, but back then, wine was what you drank with every meal. So their failure to drink wine would be the equivalent to somebody swearing off, you know, Coke or seltzer, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Yeah, it's a little bit of a scary prospect, right? So, you know, they were constantly thinking about the sale of Yosef. So therefore, when this event happens to them, and all of a sudden, they come down to Mitzrayim, they're thrown into jail for 3 days, they had a clean record up till now. You know, probably no driving violations even, right? And then all of a sudden, they're thrown into jail for 3 days. Kishabo litlospo, mofsus stira la dover mitzad ruven, shnipasi moim, v'hu lo hoyo besoch hamochrim. So, they're trying to figure out, okay, why are we being thrown into jail? So the obvious answer they come up with is it must have something to do with Mechiras Yosef. But wait a minute, Reuven's also in jail. Reuven didn't want to sell Yosef. So how come Reuven's here? Right? This is their train of thought. So they think as follows. It can't be that we're being thrown into prison. About halfway down the Resh Tes on the left hand column. About halfway down. They say themselves as follows. It can't be that we're being thrown into prison because of the sale of Yosef. Because then why would Reuven be in prison with us? He didn't participate in the sale. So why would we be thrown into prison? Because we threw Yosef into the pit and we all acquiesced to that. Now that, the throwing of Yosef into the pit, Reuven was involved in. Reuven was the one who suggested throwing Yosef into the pit. Now granted, Reuven suggests throwing Yosef into the pit as an alternative to killing him, but, first of all, he doesn't make that clear, right? In other words, at the time, when he says throw Yosef into the pit, you know, the impression you get is Reuven is just saying, let's not kill him with a sword, let's kill him indirectly by throwing him into the pit. He knows that, but the brothers don't know that, right? In other words, he doesn't tell the brothers, by the way, the reason I want to throw Yosef into the pit is that I can come back later and pull him out, right? He doesn't tell them that. He says, you know, Reuven says, Al tishpichu dom, hashlichu asol abor azer, v'yad al tishpichu bo, right? Let's don't kill him directly. Throw him into the pit and leave him there. Let him die indirectly. That seems to be the Pashut Pshat in the Psukim with Reuven. So the brothers say, it can't be that we're being held accountable for the sale, but for the throwing of Yosef into the pit and the distress that that caused him. Because after all, it's natural. You throw somebody into a pit. You know, it's distressing. They're going to be distressed. They're going to be upset. For that, we're all guilty, even Reuven. Right? And that's the Avol. Again, Avol by way of contrast. We're not guilty for the... It can't be we're being punished for the sale. Because then Reuven would not be in this fix with all of the rest of us. It must be Avol. However, it must be that we're being punished for the very fact that we acquiesced to throw Yosef into the pit.
I don't know where it's most, but kidnapping is not okay. So,
yeah.
They weren't held to that standard because it was before Matan
Torah. So again, they, in their minds, think that they would have been justified in killing Yosef. So the right, because that we talked about last week, yes. They felt that Yosef had the din of a rodef, that he was a pursuer, And, you know, as such, they were entitled judicially to kill him.
So
in other words, you know, selling him as a slave is a chesed. Yeah, not really. They were letting him off easy. He really deserved to be killed. So, you know, So that's his suggest. So who Amra came by Elenu Pirish Yachad Hansara. That's why the Pasuk says Alkein Ba'a Elenu Hatsara Hazos. The Pasuk could have just said Alkein Ba'a Hatsara Hazos. That's why this distress came. But Elenu, the fact that the Tsara, the difficulty, this moment of distress came Elenu to all of us, that can only be because we threw Yosef into the pit. The Kolza Kishano Maki Divrem El Hoyu Kisha Hichnusim Ba Mishma. Now, when did they make this comment? Aval Hashem v'anachnu alochinu. So, you know, the Archaim suggests that they might have made it at one of two junctions. They could have said it when they were first thrown into prison. I mean, they had 3 days, you know, to sit around in prison and talk to one another. You know, after a certain point, you know, playing tic-tac-toe just, you know, kind of runs out of steam. So they're sitting around for 3 days and they're thinking to one another, why are we here? So, you know, the Archaim suggests maybe it's at that point that they said, we must be here because of something pertaining to Yosef. Alternatively, says the Arachayim, we'll get to alternatively in a minute, the Tam Shesidar HaKosav Dibayim Ba'achron Ulitzash L'Rotzal Ma'avsik Tov Kol Dibay Yosef. Right? If you read the Chumash sequentially, the way things are presented is as follows. They get thrown into prison for 3 days. Then at the end of 3 days, Yosef says, okay, I'll let you out. You just have to keep one of you here, and the others go home and bring home the Yomim. And then, in the Chumash's, you know, retelling of events, that's when they say, oh, this must be because of Yosef. Now, the Archaim is prepared to suggest that the Psukim are not necessarily in chronological order. The Archaim considers the possibility that really the order of the Psukim is, you know, chronologically what happened is as follows. They get thrown into prison. They're there for 3 days. While they're there for 3 days, the conversation that's recorded in the Chumash, the brothers to one another, and then Reuven to the rest of the brothers, takes place. Again, they're cooped up together for 3 days. They got a lot of time to talk to one another. And then at the end of 3 days, Yosef says, okay, I'll make you a deal. One of you stay here. The rest of you are going to go back and bring back Binyamin. That's one possibility. So why does the Chumash have it out of order? So the Archaim says, look, it's just the way of telling the story. Yosef is talking. So we don't want to interrupt Yosef's discussion with the brothers. So Yosef initially says to the brothers, I'm going to throw you into prison for 3 days. And then at the end of the 3 days, he gave them this deal. But the Torah says, and while they were in prison, they had the following conversation. That's one way of reading the Psukim, says the Archaim. However, in a moment, we'll just see if there's another way of reading the Psukim. Right. So Rabbi Reuven says, you know, it's clear in the pasuk that there's a melitz, that there's an interpreter who's standing there, right, who's standing there conveying all of the words. I'm sorry, they don't understand that Yosef really understands the Hebrew that they're speaking to one another because of the fact that the interpreter is there. Doesn't that imply that they're in the presence of Yosef at that point? Right, so I think that's certainly a very good proof. But on the other hand, it's not conclusive. As one can say, again, maybe it's not the Pashto Pshat, but one can say, while they're in prison for the 3 days, Yosef happens to go and check in on them, and he happens to overhear them having this conversation while he happens to be there. Now, again, you're right, I that doesn't sound like the Pashtos, but apparently the Archaim is comfortable, you know, assuming that could be, right? But alternatively, however, if you want to follow the chronological order of the Psukim, i.e., the brothers are put into prison for 3 days, while they're in prison for 3 days, they have no inkling, they don't even have a hava amina, that they're there because of something having to do with the sale of Yosef. It's only after Yosef lets them out and says, okay, now the rest of you go home, bring back the Yavin, and one of you will stay here in prison. Then, all of a sudden, in response to that, they say, oh, this must have to do with Yosef. Why then? Right? In other words, the real tzara isn't at that point. The real tzara is that they're thrown into prison for what turns out to be 3 days. I mean, when they get thrown into prison, they don't know it's going to be for 3 days. As far as they know, they're going to be locked up in prison for the rest of their lives in Mitzrayim. Right? So why didn't it occur to them then that this had to do with Yosef? So hear this very fascinating idea, the Aruch Chaim says. V'ulai, perhaps, ki kolim lo yergishu, v'choshvu ki adam ba'o b'chira, v'rosan lehara, v'lo avon Yosef golim. Right? Perhaps initially when they were thrown into prison, they didn't think that their being thrown into prison was the result of a sin. Things happen. And because Adam is Baal Bechira, because people can make choices, we all have Bechira Chavshis, sometimes people can choose to do harm to others, and the victim is not really deserving. The victim is not being punished for any sin. The victim is just the guy who is in the wrong place at the wrong time, and is, you know, basically being acted upon by someone else's Bechira, meaning, if God gives Bechira Chavshis to every human being, so by definition, human beings are going to make bad decisions, and those bad decisions are going to impact on people badly, and therefore, when a person gets hurt in this world, it's not always, says the Aruch Chaim, a result of some kind of punishment that he did. Now, this is a fascinating idea. We're going to see the Aruch Chaim is going to say this a few times. Right? But a tremendous chiddush of the Aruch Chaim. In other words, if somebody basically says the Aruch Chaim, if somebody mugs you, Rahman al-Islam, I shouldn't say you, somebody mugs someone, right? That someone can't necessarily assume that he is being punished divinely for some crime that he committed. Maybe, you know, this is just the natural result of God giving Bechira Chavshis to human beings. This mugger had Bechira Chavshis to mug me or not to mug me. Right? He chose to mug me, and that's what happens when God gives Bechira Chavshis to people. That's what happens. So let's just hold on a minute, because let's just finish the thought, and we'll see where the Aruch Chaim really has this in a couple of different places. The Aruch Chaim's understanding of Hashgacha. Right? So, when they first get thrown into prison, they think to themselves, okay, maybe we're not being punished, you know? That's what happens. Yosef, this Egyptian leader is a Baal Bechira. He has the ability to have free will and to make his own choices. And Nebuch, we just happen to be in the way. Okay, so, you know, they don't necessarily do a cheshbon nefesh as a result. And they don't start thinking to themselves that we're being punished because of anything that we did to Yosef, because as far as they're concerned, he kind of just deserves Yosef. They don't feel any regrets over what happened. They only start thinking that what's happening to them has any connection to Yosef when Yosef takes them out of prison and says, okay, the rest of you go home, but one brother is going to stay here in prison. That starts the wheels moving in their minds. They say, wait a minute, one brother is going to stay here in prison and be separated from the others. That sounds like midah keneged midah. That sounds like, you know, that brings back all of these associations with the story of Yosef. Oh, I wonder if we're being punished for what happened to Yosef. Right? So fascinating, right? In other words, they're in prison. They say, okay, mikra, you know, it just happened, okay, yeah, you know, it happens to the best of people, you know, it could happen. But it's only once they see the midah keneged midah, says the Aruch Chaim, that they start thinking to themselves, maybe this is a punishment. If it's not midah keneged midah, if it doesn't line up, you can't assume, as P.R. Chaim is saying, you can't assume that it's divine punishment. Maybe it's just the result of people being Baalei Bechira.
We learn the principle that anytime something negative happens, it's supposed to influence introspection. If we can't think of anything and we've been wrong, then perhaps we didn't learn the time, didn't learn. So, how does that apply to this
point? Right.
The skull in the river.
Hillel, with the skull in the river.
Oh, yeah. So, I think that one of those you know, just guilty, but the person who received it was so this was, and it'd be guilty of this as well.
Right.
Deserving of this punishment.
Right. So, again, this is a it's a humdinger of an Aruch Hayim, you know, in terms of the yisod that he's putting forward. So let's talk about Harry's two questions over here. So, so the Gemara says in Bracha, Simrela Adam, she's certain by Allah, yifashbish b'maisav. Right? If the person sees that he's suffering, let him review his deeds and figure out how he, you know, maybe did something wrong and has to do tshuva. So how does this fit in with what the brothers are doing? It sounds like the Aruch Hayim is saying the brothers are languishing in prison, and they say to themselves, okay, tough break. Happens to the best of them, right? Their immediate reaction is not to make a cheshbon on nefesh. Their immediate reaction is to say, look, you know, you go down to Egypt, sometimes it happens. Right? Wrong place, wrong time, you know. Maybe it wasn't the smartest thing to go down, you know, to Egypt. Still not the smartest thing to go down to Egypt many, many years later, right? So, okay, you know, we took our chances and we got locked up. Why aren't they not mefashbish b'maaseihem? Why don't they look into their deeds the way the Gemara suggests that a person is supposed to do? So perhaps, the truth is, if you think about it, the Aruch Hayim may fit very well with that Gemara, ironically enough. How so? What's the Gemara? Imroa adam shisurin bo'in olav yifashbish b'maaseihem. If a person sees that he's suffering, let him consider his deeds. Imlo matza, if he didn't find, he'd let him bevitol Torah. Let him pin these yisurim that he's having on bittul Torah. Let me ask you a question. What do you mean? No, but even before we get to that, what do you mean? He went through his maisim and he didn't find anything that he did wrong. What kind of person are we talking about over here? I mean, azat tzaddik. So maybe that's the answer, right? Maybe he is azat tzaddik. You know, he went through, you know, he makes a, you know, they say about the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim won Erev Yom Kippur, you know, started reviewing the year. And he couldn't account for 10 minutes. And he started, one of the Talmidim was in the room, you know, and the Chofetz Chaim started crying bitterly, Ribbono Shel Olam, how is it that I wasted 10 minutes over the course of the last year? Well, we can't really be massing such things, right? But what kind of person, other than the Chofetz Chaim, this Mefashbesh B'maisav, looks through his deeds and says, no, I'm all good, no problem, must be Bittul Torah. Right? What kind of person are we talking about over here? So I think, the Gemara is directed at everyday people. The Gemara, you know, isn't directed towards unbelievable tzaddikim. So I think the Aruch Hayim would actually interpret that Gemara as follows. Imroa adam sheyisurim bo'in olav, if a person sees that he's, you know, being beset by yisurim, yifashbish b'maaseihem, let him consider his actions. What is he considering? Not whether he's sinned or not. Let him consider his actions and see whether the punishment fits the crime. Let him see whether the particular yisurim are coming upon him in such a way that they're midah keneged midah. In lo matza, if he doesn't see any midah keneged midah, not that he doesn't find any sins, of course he's going to have sins, but if he doesn't see anything that's midah keneged midah, then you'd let him with bittul Torah. Then, you know, let him think that it's some kind of generic thing for bittul Torah. Now again, prior to Maimon Har Sinai, there's no bittul Torah. So they just, you know, look into their deeds, and, you know, they say, there's no midah keneged midah over here. Right? So perhaps that Gemara actually fits in very well with the Aruch Hayim's Mahalach. Yeah.
But to say that a person has a bechira, it does come from a punishment, and then, you know, a person is given that right. So how would you understand something like the halakha course?
I hate to say it. I mean, you perhaps would understand it exactly like that.
What?
I mean, I hate to say it. Perhaps, according to the Aruch Hayim, you'd understand it exactly like that. I mean, you know, people have bechira, and that could happen. Now, again, the Aruch Hayim might distinguish between a yachid and a tzibur. That certainly is a concept we have in Baalei Hashkafa, that, you know, the fate of the tzibur is much more directed by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it's not as haphazard as the fate of a yachid, right? That might be an answer that the Aruch Hayim would give. But the Aruch Hayim, again, you know, might saying that, you know, yeah, sometimes it happens. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Right? It's a scary thought, but that's, again, what he's suggesting. Yeah.
So, is this profound concept understandable to each individual so that they, in the examination of their deeds, they can say, aha, that's negative, or is the way in which the Rav Shlomo
works are truly impenetrable, and if you have a little bang, you have a little bang, and you have to go further.
I think the Archaim is suggesting that the Midah Keneged Midah is something that a person could figure out if he tries. In other words, that's exactly what he's saying over here. The Shvatim, before they saw the Midah Keneged Midah, they said, okay, it just happened. Once they see the Midah Keneged Midah, in other words, oh, wait, one of the brothers being separated from us and put in prison. That's exactly what we did to Yosef. Oh, well, you know, maybe this is punishment for Yosef. The implication is that you as a human being can figure out the Midah Keneged Midah.
And every morning when we read about the Akedah occurring in the Rit Vayelashem, we saw Zohar. In other words, Zohar didn't say, oh, no. In other words, he had to get another test. He knew that he was up for all these tests.
Well, okay, so that tests are different. There he has a direct communication from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're talking about, you know, in the regular, you know, Mahalach HaChaim.
Yes.
You know, in the regular Mahalach HaChaim, the Or HaChaim is saying, things sometimes happen. And you can't necessarily assume that everything's going to be a punishment.
Sometimes when these happen, the conventional wisdom seems to be examine your mezuzah. So, if I understand, we're saying something, no, that's not what the Archaim is saying. Go examine your mezuzah. It's that you can, by introspection, by examining yourself, you can therefore see and understand negative. There's no need to rush and check.
Right, right. No, Midah means you look at the crime, you look at the punishment. If there's some kind of correlation, you can feel relatively confident that the punishment is coming for this crime. That's Midah Keneged Midah.
Yes, I don't know if I'm capable of understanding that.
Yeah, no, but the Archaim is saying, I think, that people can. In other words, if you look, you know, a person gets, I'll make something up. I mean, if a person, whatever, you know, if the crime involved X and the punishment also involves X, you know, so that would be Midah Keneged Midah.
How does he explain the whole basic advice we should change?
So again, maybe a tzibur is different than a yachid.
Maybe it's so if you said clearly what's going to happen to us, so mm-hmm. you say here it's not because of our sins, what do you mean? That's not clear. And that's not clear. This
whole thing,
you know,
if Ramah would have
said this, you would have been shafted.
Did anybody
argue with them? This is like...
Yeah, no, people definitely do argue with the Archaim. But besides that, the Archaim is a tremendous chiddush. Now, I think the Archaim will be maskim as well. There is a concept of God using human beings, you know, to carry out his will. That's in the Nevi'im. Hoy Ashur Shevet Afi. The Navi says that Assyria is the staff of God's wrath to carry out his will against the Aseres HaShvatim. So you have the concept, but, you know, people are not exclusively pawns in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There can be a thing where a person chooses to do evil, and innocent people will be impacted upon by that. Yeah.
First of all,
the Navigor, they have been welcome back to
Right.
Works very well for the Archaim.
And the person, nothing happens to the person unless
there's God, Lulam, and Shemayim. But basically means that if you... Yeah, and heats. Right? And heat. So in other words, if a person walks out in freezing weather without a coat, he'll get cold and you can't blame it on the Ribbono Shel Olam. So I think the Archaim would say, and similarly, if you walk through a dangerous neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning, and Rahman al-Islam, something happens to you, you can't blame that on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right. But
as you're thinking that there is this thing, there is a concept of that tzaddikim are punished for the avon of the dar. Once there's a time of punishment, even the tzaddikim are. I mean, it's not that that just happened. It's just that this is a time of punishment. And everything, and then for
certain reasons,
Tzaddikim will also be swept away
with that. Right, now again, I don't think that's what the Archaim is saying, though. You know, again, we'll see this the Archaim in a few places. The Archaim is basically saying that, you know, there are some things that happen which are just a result of people's Bechira, and the people are victims as a result. Let's just see a little bit more in the Arachaim, then we'll see another Arachaim where he says exactly the same thing. Again, this is the Arachaim Shita in Hashkocha, and it's an incredible Shita. Kvar Hashanti Bekama Mekomas Kiya Avon Yolid Bitnuso Uvit Salma. You should, I've told you in many places that sin begats sin. In other words, when you do an Aveira, it creates a force in the world which is the Tsura, the shape of that Aveira. Right, in other words, and that boomerangs back against the person who made the Aveira. The Sod Omro Tishalin Laish Kema Aseyu, that a man is paid back in accordance with his action. Kumo Kein Advarim Kan Shehichiv Lohem Liba Mitzara Sachiyam. Right? It's exactly what happened over here. As Shimon is locked up, the rest of the brothers feel for Shimon. As they begin to feel for Shimon, they say, wait a minute. Right? We didn't feel for Yosef. Who? Omrom Avol. And that's what they say, Avol. However, Pirish, Mahoyo HaMikra Zebederech Acher Lo Ayinom HaSdikim Shal Sibas Yosef Bo Aleinu. If this had just, if we were some beset by some kind of sorrow, we wouldn't have pinned this on the Maisa with Yosef. Avol, but Atavada Eshem Anach Lesheru Inu Tzara Snapsho Deskanino. Now we know that it's coming about because of Yosef, because of the correlation between the crime and the punishment. The Mido Kenegan Mido is what prompts them to connect it to Yosef, and that's Pshat in the Avol. However, you know, however, because this is not just an event, but something which is, you know, clearly Mido Kenegan Mido, that's why we're relating this to Yosef. Yeah.
So the question is, being that this was a manufactured mitzvah, that Yosef brought it out deliberately, he knew how it would be interpreted. So the question is did you really say it's a mitzvah?
That's David's question, but it's mitzvah connected mitzvah because Yosef orchestrated it. So is it really true? But from the brothers' perspective, who are making the statement, they don't know that it's orchestrated. They don't know that he's Yosef. Right? They see this as totally out of the blue. And from their perspective, they see this as being Mido Kenegan Mido. Right? Was it really? I don't know. But
right, but
in a sense, it doesn't really matter. In other words, you know, the Chumash is relaying to us their perception of the situation. And through their perception, we do learn this Hashkafa, which would be applicable in a quote-unquote real Mido Kenegan Mido situation, not a contrived one.
Right. In other words, their reaction is that we have to search ourselves. I mean, this is immediate connected media, so
mm-hmm.
So therefore we understand why it came about.
Right.
So we learn from them how we should act in a situation where we see immediate connected media.
Right, exactly. Let's just see for a moment, just turn back to Ayeshiv for a minute. We'll see the portion that we skipped last time. We didn't get to you last time. Where he says this exact thing in the very Mechir of Yosef, on page Kuf Tzadi. Vayatzileu mi'odom. Right? Reuven hears that the brothers are about to kill Yosef. Right? Now, Yosef comes down to the brothers. Vayomer ish el achiv. One man says to his brother, which again, Chazal says, Shimon to Levi. Shimon and Levi say to one another, let's take out our swords and kill him right on the spot. And then Reuven says, no. You know, let's not kill him, let's throw him into the pit. And it says, Vayatzileu mi'odom, he saved them, you know, he saved Yosef from their hands. In what sense? So here, that's, Arachaim says as follows, Pirush, that is to say, bottom of page Kuftzari, Lefisha Adam Baal Bechira Verasa, man is granted Bechira by the Ribbono Shel Olam, man has free will. V'yachol laharog mi shelo nischayiv misa, a man has the ability to kill another man, even if that other man is not Chayiv Misa. In this case, Chayiv Misa means from God's perspective. In other words, it's possible for a person to be innocent and yet be a murder victim, because that is the natural result of the fact that people are Bechira Choshes. I mean, if a murderer could only kill someone who's Chayiv Misa, then he doesn't really have Bechira, right?
Yes, in fact, I think that David's question underscores the point that they didn't, the brothers didn't know that Yosef made this maneuver. But that proves that the point of the Arachaim is that he acted as an agent which caused them to then consider their deeds. So and here again, and I think it underscores the point and helps me understand this, that this what we just read now, is that you could have an agent do this. Doesn't have to be Yad Hashem that you contemplate this at such a high level. You could have an agent who then is serving the will of Hashem and makes everyone vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, exactly. So,
but if that's so, in this case, what does the Arachayim then have to say about the notion of tshuva? Because if you think that, gee, I'm essentially an innocent, but I know that everyone has free will, so therefore I am vulnerable, where does that place you, where does that place such a person in a understanding of the Arachayim in terms of tshuva? Or Yiras Shemayim?
Adarabha. I mean, it probably adds Yiras Shemayim, because a guy walks through life and he really feels, oh my gosh, you know, I'm really at the mercy of the elements. You know, I'm at the mercy of other people. I really hope that the Ribbono Shel Olam could do something to intercede. I don't know that it will necessarily happen, but I really daven that the Ribbono Shel Olam should, you know, make sure that I'm in the right place at the right time, not in the wrong place at the wrong time. Right? So let's just see this Arachayim. Fascinating Arachayim. Again, you know. Yeah. But 1 second. A person can kill someone who is innocent, because that's the natural result of the idea of Bechira Chavshis. As opposed to animals. Why? A person cannot be killed by a wild animal unless the person is Chayiv Misa LaShamayim. In other words, the animals lack Bechira. So if you get mauled by a lion, that's because God willed you to be mauled by the lion. But if you get shot by a mugger, that may be just a result of the mugger's bechira, and it's not necessarily because of anything you did wrong. Or
that lady in the elevator last week when that was caught in air.
Yeah.
How do you learn that?
So that the Arachayim says is not a result of anybody's bechira, so that was preordained. In other words, the Arachayim is saying a fascinating idea. A fascinating idea. I mean, it's hard to swallow, but it's a fascinating idea. If someone is victimized by a non-human being, an animal, an elevator, whatever it happens to be, so that's a direct result of God's gezeira. If someone is hurt or killed by another human being, that could be the result of bechira chavshis of that being. Now, God did not decree this person to die, but the bechira of this other human being came in and interfered at that point. Let's just see the continuation. For who omro vayatzileu mi adam? It was in that sense that Reuven saved Yosef, right? In other words, again, let's just chazer up what happened. Shimon and Levi say, let's go kill him with our swords. So Reuven, no, don't kill him with your swords, throw him into the pit. Oh, so says the Pasuk, that was the salvation of Yosef. Why? Not just because he saved Yosef from immediate death, right? You say, okay, he saved him from immediate death, but he threw him into a pit. I mean, he could have died in the pit. No. Pirish miyad ha-bechiri. Says the Arachayim, when Reuven says, let's take Yosef and throw him into the pit, he's no longer at the mercy of human beings, he's at the mercy of the elements. In a sense, he has a better chance being at the mercy of the elements. Because the elements, if God's Xerah is that he's going to live, and that the other brothers are going to bow down to him, as he saw in his dreams, so then the animals are not going to touch him, and the fall is not going to hurt him, and you know, none of the elements are going to impact upon him. However, says the Arachayim, don't look at me, says the Arachayim, right? Says the Arachayim. Says the Arachayim. Had Reuven not thrown, arranged for Yosef to be thrown in the pit, so then, despite the dreams which predicted that the brothers would be bowing down to him, Shimon and Levi could have run their swords through Yosef and been mevatel the dreams. And, you know, the dreams would have been canceled. In other words, God had this thing in mind with the dreams that the brothers would bow down to Yosef. But Shimon and Levi, with one, you know, movement of their swords, could have been mevatel all the dreams. Right? That's the power of Bechira. Now, I just want to relate this back to something we did our very first session with the Arachayim. Arachayim at the beginning, at the end rather, Parshas Bereishis, also a mind-blowing Arachayim in terms of Hashkafa, where if you recall, the Arachayim raises the classic conundrum, the contradiction between Bechira and Yediyah. On the one hand, people have free will. On the other hand, God knows everything. So how do you resolve those two things? So Chaim also said a tremendous chiddush, that God chooses to restrict his Yediyah. He chooses, God is a member of the know-nothing party. Right? He chooses to restrict his knowledge in order to allow people Bechira. I think a common denominator between that unbelievable Aruch Chaim and this unbelievable Aruch Chaim is that the Aruch Chaim was a tremendous champion of the idea of Bechira. He had a very expansionist view of what Bechira is all about. It's so important that human beings have Bechira, that God is willing to limit his own Yediyah, whatever that means exactly, in order to allow people Bechira. And Bechira is so powerful that man's Bechira Chofshes can overturn a Gzeira from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And Aruch Chaim says it. Yosef dreamt these dreams, and, you know, it was a promise from God that these things would come true, with the caveat, read the fine print, unless some mugger shoots you in some alley somewhere, so then the chalaimus are going to be all gone. Right? But these are dreams which are definitely going to come true unless some Baal Bechira intercedes. Because for the Aruch Chaim, Bechira of human beings is just something which has no limits. That's ultimately Chazal as well. Ultimately means Bechira. So in other words, God can't manipulate people's Bechira, and what the Aruch Chaim apparently takes that to mean is Bechira is so great that it overcomes the idea of Hakol Bidei Shamayim. God has a certain plan. I mean, it's the opposite of the old Yiddish saying, you know, Gott tracht und Mensch lacht. That's, in a sense, what the Aruch Chaim is suggesting over here. Right? That the best laid plans of the Ribbono Shel Olam can be rendered naught by a Baal Bechira.
In the land of
how far the Aruch Chaim would take this, I don't know. But again, the statement he makes in Vayeshev that Shimon HaLevi in theory could have mevatled the Chalomos had they so desired. Had it worked out that way, they could have, you know, done away with all the Chalomos. The Nir and Mayu Chalomosov, right, really would have been fulfilled. Yeah.
There's a rule that the pool of time is never closing. So the fact that Joseph had such a Nebuah, it would be, this is maybe he said, about my city dragon.
So the question is, you know, the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu, and the Rambam echoes this, you know, say that a Nevuah Latov is never Chozer, right? So it could be there too that the Aruch Chaim draws a distinction between a Yachid and a Tzibur. In other words, the context of the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu are the predictions, the Nevuahs, about what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael.
So now the Yosef is called Yosef, it's not because his Bechira was so evidently strong,
mm-hmm.
so powerful.
Oh, that's
great. Thank you.
I was going to say, when Reuben kills Shimon, no pun intended. In other words, when one Jew kills another Jew,
yeah.
Maybe you could say it's one person's bechira independent of somebody else's bechira. Because we say Kol Yisrael Arayim Yisrael was there. So what one Jew does impacts on another Jew, and one Jew has a responsibility towards another Jew. I mean, there even, you know, Svarim talk about how we sometimes we share, we don't all have our own the nefesh, I mean our own neshama, share neshamas. But if a guy kills a Jew, could it be that that's different
from
a guy killing a Jew?
I don't think so. I mean, again, the Nachri is a Baal Bechira. So if the Nachri is a Baal Bechira, he could have killed him. Yeah.
Just to step back for one stage, when Yaakov sent down the brothers to trying to obtain food, the brothers went down dressed in their dress, you know, as Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And when you step into the Tzrayim, you step into the Tzrayim dressed as a Jew, and everybody's going to know you're a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not dressed as a Mitzri.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very obvious that Yosef saw, we got 12 guys coming down here, 12 Jews, and I have 12 brothers, something
that they're here for something. On the other hand, had the brothers gone down knowing full well that they were going into harm's way in the train, they could say, you know, actually we shouldn't dress like this,
right.
We should dress like a mitzvah. And then under those cases, you know, I was thinking that it's very possible that Yosef would never have recognized them. Mm-hmm. They could have conducted their business, you know, and
Right. Sure, no, Rav Dessler was, you know, had what to say on the Arachaim as well. But, I'll tell you the flip side of the Arachaim. The Arachaim is such a big champion of Bechira, he puts a tremendous achrayus on us. I mean, forget about what will happen to us because of some other Baal Bechira. The Arachaim is basically saying, Rabbi Sai, your big boys and girls, your Baalei Bechira, you have such kayach with your Bechira that you can even overturn a Gzar Din of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Use your Bechira wisely. It's a powerful tool. Don't misuse it and don't abuse it. Right, so that will take away. If there's a Musa Hafko for Hanukkah, now besides the Hashkaf of the Yerachayim, again, it's an unbelievable Machshav of the Yerachayim, again, and not everybody agrees, but you know, the flip side of it is Bechira is an unbelievable tool. And let's, you know, resolve this Hanukkah and thereafter to use it l'tov, and, you know, Be'ez Hashem not to abuse it. Yeah, Freilich Hanukkah to everybody.